You're listening to Talks Machina on the Critical Role Podcast Network. Talks Machina airs live at twitch.tv/Critical Role on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Pacific, and it's also uploaded to youtube.com/Critical Role on Thursday mornings. If you like our podcast, please rate and review it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Without further ado, here's this week's episode of Talks Machina.
Holy cow. This is so many people. How are you guys doing? Well, we have a super packed panel today, so we're going to get right into it. First, I want to go over some guidelines while we wait. Unfortunately, one of Sam's teeth fell out, and we're waiting for a forklift as soon as that gets here. First of all, we love you guys. Thank you for coming from all over the world, I assume, to see me read these off an iPad. Just as a note to you, everyone in the room, and the folks at home that are gonna be watching this later, we want you to enjoy yourselves as much as possible. So we just ask a few simple things from you. For the second half of today's panel, we're gonna take questions for you from you guys. We go all over the world and we wanna meet you, we wanna hear from you, we want you to ask the questions. I also travel that much because I use the stubs to show the judge whenever I get a failure to appear. When it's your turn to ask a question, please just one question for one cast member. Try to refrain from asking the whole cast to answer your question. We don't have enough time, and there's still a lot of them here for some reason. Critical Role show channel type questions only, please. I don't want to hear any questions for Matt about some obscure video game I've never heard of. You can't try to get any info about Avengers out of Travis and Laura. Critical Role is not in the business of discussing release dates. It's important that you know that. We love to hear everybody's story and where you came from and your home games and all that fun stuff. Unfortunately, the panel's not really set up for that, so when you have a question, please just say your name, who you are, tell us, and then ask your question. That would be awesome. Last but not least, don't forget to love each other, whether you are, yeah. Whether you're lining up for the panel, whether you're sitting next to someone you know or you don't, whether you're at home watching this on Tuesday with your computer open to your favorite social media platform, ready to talk shit about the panel and everybody here, don't forget to love each other. Without further ado, I would like to introduce the cast of Critical Role. Travis Willingham! Marisha Ray! Oh. Talison Jeffy! Holy shit, it's Ashley Johnson! Sam Regal! Liam Oberon. Laura Bailey. And Mr. Matthew Mercer. Yeah. Wow. Oh, thank you. Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's all ages, be careful. All right.
That's a big room.
Yeah.
It's a really good room. Look at
What's up, everybody?
Hey, something we like to do at each of these panels, if you are in cosplay and you are physically able, can you stand up so we can see you? Wow. Wow.
Look at Chris Lockie running to the front. Get that cardio.
Oh my God, that's cool.
Oh. Yes.
Oh my God, oh my God.
Thank you so much. Yes. You guys look amazing. Look at that bow, it lights up. That's
so
cool.
Holy cow.
Does it fire?
No, don't try!
If somebody asks Matt a question about some obscure anime, you're allowed to give it a shot. We've got something extremely special for all of you here, but before we get into that, I would like you in an orderly fashion and respecting those around you, especially the ones in fragile costume, you can begin lining up, I believe, right here in the center. Please do not step on Brittany Wallach-Key. We need her for at least another year.
She's like a derby horse. We just run her to the ground.
Shout out to Brittany. Come on.
Yeah. Woo! Oh, come on. Well, gang, every year at Comic-Con for the past couple years, we've tried to bring you something fun and exciting and unreleased centered around our comic series with Dark Horse, which is Vox Machina Origins Wolverine. This year, we have a really special treat. For the first time ever, we are excited to show you the first three never-before-seen pages of the second issue, which comes out August 14th. Write it down. Put it in your phone. But that's cool. But what's even cooler is instead of just showing it to you, we're going to have the cast do a read-through of those three pages. That sound fun? Sounds fun to me. All right, Matthew Mercer.
All righty, so...
Okay, we're ready then.
We're doing it?
We're doing it live! All right, so, for those of you who have caught up, this takes place in Westruun, shortly after meeting Pike and searching as to how Grog has managed to vanish from the group, which is actually how the second session of our home campaign began. So, beginning.
Grog, my boy, what are you doing at Gat Shadow? A bad place, a very bad place.
Don't worry, we'll find him.
What can you tell us about Gat Shadow, Mr. Trickfoot?
Well, many around here call it the Cursed Mountain. They say madness lies deep beneath the rock, a power that draws all manner of vile things to it.
Vile, huh? That's certainly one way to describe Grog. Big idiot.
It's okay to be worried about him. We'd better get going.
We? Where are we now?
Oh, that's my line. I was entranced by your goddamn acting. It's going to be incredibly dangerous. You should really stay here. You know, leave this to the professionals.
I know it's dangerous. That's what the armor and the weapons are for.
Oh, okay.
Grog is my friend, and if he's in trouble, I'm gonna help. Besides, the Everlight can provide us guidance in finding him. Unless one of you happens to be a cleric.
I guess we're away now.
Well, good luck! Keep them safe, Pike!
Oh, well, aren't you just the cutest?
Oh, I wish I was a bear.
Pardon my asking, Pike, but how did Grog come to live in your home? He's just, well, he's so big?
Yeah.
End of scene.
There you go. Oh.
Just a tease.
Yeah.
A little tease.
Look at that good boy.
It does something to me hearing those voices again every time, man. The second issue will be available on August 14th through your favorite local comic shop or digitally on Dark Horse Digital and Comixology. The second Vox Machina Origin series was written by our Frank Jody Hauser. Are you here? Boom! Legend.
Yeah. So
the
good.
Legend, Jody Hauser. this day forward, known as the legend. And art from critter Olivia Sampson. Are you here? Probably not.
No.
Oh, it's okay. Next year.
But wherever Olivia is, you're amazing. Your art is incredible.
Ooh. Absolutely.
So good. Killing it.
Colorist Misasik. Did I say that right, Liam?
Misasik?
I've heard Misasik. I've heard Misasik. I'm not sure.
I think we should rely on my interpretation. Yeah. And letterer Ariana Maher. So check out the Dark Horse booth here at San Diego Comic-Con, too, to pick up your own convention-exclusive cover variant. Holy cow, woo! Done by Babs Tarr. Ah! Wow. Yeah. This is
Travis,
a good year.
What does that sound like?
Yay! It's a fun year to be a critter at Comic-Con. Okay. Let's see who's up first.
We're just diving in.
We're diving in.
Jumping right on. Picture.
Hey, what's your name?
Hey, my name is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Real quick, I want to apologize to Marisha for putting her on the spot with my extremely geeky question last year. It was about the possible Critical Role Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows crossover.
Oh, oh
yep. Right. That was geeky. Wow, that was obscure.
Yes.
Still is.
Wow.
Hi, everybody.
This question is going to be for Ashley.
Oh, thank God. Good luck.
I was curious, when you guys were doing some of the epilogues for some of the NPCs and other characters for the first campaign, there's a certain character I don't recall an epilogue was revealed for, so I was wondering what your idea was the epilogue for Pike's cousin, JB.
Oh.
Oh. Well, I think that's probably something we should discuss.
What do you mean, Ashley? You don't have an idea? I thought you fleshed this out in your head. What are your thoughts? Let me know.
I mean, that character was a surprise, obviously, in the campaign. I mean, that's something that we'll probably talk about. Maybe we'll get on that.
No, but really, how did her story end, Ashley?
They all died.
That's your fault now.
That's all you, Dan.
Unfair. That is unfair.
Man. It's canon now, thanks to Dan.
Lord have mercy. Hey, what's your name?
Hello, and I'm very short.
Someone shine a light on this beautiful person.
Hello, my name is Nisha. I'm from Orlando, Florida.
Hi.
How are you? Ashley, I meant to tell you the pin that we gave you earlier is by the art of Danny Haas, Haas. Awesome. That was very remiss of me. He's my friend, and I forgot his name when I met you.
It's a very amazing pin. Can you tell him what it is?
It's a Hamilton pin. It's an original design by Danny Haas, and it says...
immigrants, it's, we get the job done.
We get the job done.
Yeah.
It's Tay Diggs.
Thank you for that.
It's awesome. So I'm going to ask a hard question right off the bat. I'm sorry about this. So as I am very happy to tell people, I'm a 53-year-old Indian woman who follows D&D because I have an amazing daughter who had the common sense to bring me to D&D. It has completely changed my existence, and so have all of you. And Marisha, you know that already because I told you that already. I'm going to ask a big one. So any of you can choose to answer this. What is the single most important lesson you've learned as you've progressed through the journey of Critical Role from the beginning to where it is today?
Wow, that's a good question.
It's all about the people you travel with.
I think for me and for many of us, and what this is a testament to is if you can stick to the priority of making the friendship the priority in your life, the good things will come, you know. This whole thing has just been a strange phenomenon where we never expected any of this, and through all of it, just ensuring that our friendship was the most important thing to maintain and to check in with, and I'm just very happy to be alongside these people still all these years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and shout out to you guys for being on this journey with us. I mean, like, just watching like this room grow and grow every year has been phenomenal. So thank you for everyone for coming back year after year and supporting us. And for like the 10 to 15% of you who have no idea what's going on right now, we are extremely charming and extremely brilliant people. So trust us. But like these guys said, like it's been amazing to just go on this journey together and become closer with you guys. I learned that guy's name. He's Taliesin.
Like 3 weeks ago, it finally stuck. It's been
I've been such a journey. I've been calling him Allison forever.
One a year, he learns.
One a year.
Hi, my name is Caitlin.
Hello.
Hello.
You look amazing.
Thank you. My question, if one or two of you want to answer it, because I know it's not supposed to be everybody. What is your favorite role play moment from campaign one or two that did not involve your own character?
Ooh. Well, that takes me out of it.
I got it. I was such a fan of Vex popping up out of the water in the bathtub. Straight fire! Loved it.
Yeah, that was gross.
That was great.
Oh, man.
I was a fan of that, too.
Anything Matt Mercer does is a pretty fantastic role-playing moment. Coming up with fully formed characters on the fly? Come on!
It's true.
I am just happy that you guys don't judge me for my psychosis.
Yeah, I think a certain pirate woman reaching the end of her line is one of mine.
That was good. I think mine was Scanlan's whole, as much as I hated it personally, I thought it was really wonderful, everything you did.
Just everything across the whole campaign?
No, everything you did when you left.
Spoilers, Laura.
Yeah, what she's essentially
saying is...
Been
on for a while, you guys.
As soon as Scanlan was gone, it got better.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just so shocking. Like, we did not... I just didn't think that was going to happen. It was so...
You don't... It could happen again.
Shut up, Sam.
There were some Percy Vax standoffs that were pretty great. Let's stick out of my head.
Oh, man. I personally will say Percival and Grog having the fight underneath the keep shortly after the Chromafall was...
Yes.
I'm so sad no one got to see like how that continued all the way into the kitchen afterwards where we were yeah, it was so much... Shoot, just,
it was great. Thank you.
It was so good.
It was so good.
One day.
I really like Percy and Vex in Syngorn.
Yeah.
That was pretty great.
I liked you showing up to the Pirate King and just busting out all of that Cobalt Soul stuff. I was not prepared. I was not prepared for
Neither
that.
Neither was I.
Oh, man. We could go on forever.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question.
Thank
that was awesome.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. You look great. It's awesome. Hey, what's your name?
Hi, this is Rachel. Jesus.
Your name's
Jesus? Hello, Jesus.
I've been looking for you my whole life.
Wow.
Yeah, he is risen.
We're not ready.
Please.
Why am I floating?
You've already won.
My name is Rachel.
Hi.
Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Rachel.
And first of all, congratulations on a very successful Kickstarter campaign.
Thank you.
Congrats to you guys.
Thank you guys. Yeah.
Part of that is, for Matt specifically, how has it been adapting the game on Twitch and the show into an animated, kind of more condensed show, and how are you coping with handing off the voices in your head to new and other people?
That's a very good question. It's been a new process. It's very hard when you've worked to build an intricate world and a narrative and a story and. And to be fair, I only write, you know, the thorough line in the NPCs. They still carry a lot of the stories, so it's not like the whole thing is my baby, like I was the only author, thankfully. But it's adaptation is hard because we played for hundreds of hours, and we have to condense it into a season. So there is a lot of truncating and some changes that have to be made to fit the medium. But there's some of those changes that in the room, I'm like, you know, that makes more sense. You know, this actually will not be detrimental to the experience. And then there are some where I have to hold the line and be like, no, this is too important. This stays. And they'll argue, you know, yeah, but mainstream media. I'm like, this is a mainstream media. This is Critical Role. You know, and there, yeah, like a lot of films and TV, the like things might tie up or link or, you know, coincidences will make things come out in a beautiful bow and everything connects at the end. And I don't want that. You know, some things should be messy. Some things are their own threads. And so there's been, you know, kind of finding that balance. But, you know, it's going great. It's been really fun and really wild to watch other people play in this space and take things and run with it and come up with new interesting takes on things that I hadn't considered. And I'm really excited about the prospect of getting to cast some of these NPCs.
Yeah.
It's going to be really wild to watch other people breathe life into things that just existed in my head.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, what's your name?
Hi, it's Sean. Again, hi. This is probably the third or fourth year I've been up here.
Yeah, about to say, yeah, right.
See you again.
I want to thank you all for everything you've been putting forward ever since the channel split off, including the figure set from Kickstarter, which came through.
Hey.
Yasha was the only one in my box that was facing the wrong way and arrived on the day she left the party.
Ooh. So you did this.
UPS.
UPS.
My question is, actually, given the ever-growing pervasiveness of Sam's D&D Beyond sketches at the beginning of each episode, what point can we expect a day of the Twitch channel to be dedicated to an entire Sam Riegel D&D Beyond telethon?
Oh my God. That's legitimately a great idea. I could be like the Jerry Lewis and we could just get calls and that would be awesome. And it would just be me. I could, you know, like, I don't, you guys are too young, but Jerry Lewis had a telethon, and he would get so tired, he would, like, suck oxygen through a mask to, like, just keep going. I could do that. I've always wanted an oxygen tank.
We could get you a helium tank, and you could just get, like higher and higher in tone, and as it goes longer and longer. Yeah.
We can do this. Marisha, I grabbed Travis's credit card during the last question.
I'll talk to Vinny.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
Don't apologize or ask for royalties.
Don't think it's forgiven.
This is some incredible cosplay right here. What's your name?
My name is Mitchell.
Thank
you, Brian.
Hey.
So my question is for Marisha, actually, fittingly enough, from that. You've played two characters that have very different relationships with like leadership and authority.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what you've taken away from them going into the role that you have now, where you have to hear pitches and do everything as content and decide what happens and why we get Yeehaw Game Ranch, but not Crit Roll Land.
Wow.
Thank you. Go on.
I feel like there's subtle shade coming from the audience. When I kind of started at Geek & Sundry and was creative director over there, it kind of coincided right as Keyleth was really amping up her quest to leadership. So it was actually very fascinating kind of living it in both lives, and I learned a lot from Keyleth. And yeah, now I feel like Bo just helps me be more assertive in my opinions. Yeah, so it was like one kind of led to the other very nicely.
We don't argue with Marisha very much because she punches people a lot more now.
It's great influence across the board. But yeah, no, and to answer your question about like why certain things, we have this rule in the studio where we have to be careful with what we say out loud because apparently it will just happen. Strong
puppets.
Powers of, huh? Puppets.
Someone said puppets one day, and then 400 puppets showed up.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's more of my job as creative director for the channel to just know when to not say no and just let people go.
I would agree.
Sorry, Crit Roll Land.
We should do the telethon for sure.
Oh, I'm biting my tongue. I've got some VCs lined up. Just give us a few years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was it Mitchell?
Yes.
Wow, it's the first name I've ever gotten right. Okay. Literally, I will mark this day. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Caleb.
Hold on.
Hey.
There's some bass.
It's going. The Winona Earp panel. I know it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, hello, my name is Caleb. The question I want to direct to is to Liam.
Hey.
No way.
Why'd you make a character about me?
Well, when the show first started, I was just so excited to hear my name as like one of the characters on the show. But the question I wanted to ask you was, as you are resting or leveling up, preparing spells, do you try to choose spells that would more optimize the party or more in line with how your character is portrayed or their personality?
Oh, it is a combination of all of those things. He has plans that he wants to try to accomplish, multiple plans, but then also he likes these, well, I'm not supposed to swear here. Okay, these people.
Germans?
Yeah. Scheißkopf. yeah, I mean, I there's definitely long-term goals, and every once in a while I change my mind to try to do something good for the group. I chose a spell leveling up recently that I haven't used once that I chose for the group.
What is it? What is it?
What is it?
Group hug?
That's a cantrip. Seeming. I chose seeming.
Ooh.
Oh. Like it's seeming all over you, but the opportunity just hasn't arisen.
Yeah.
Respect the card. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Remember the little card in front of you, boys, that says there might be people under the eggs? Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Caleb.
Thank you very much, Caleb.
Good, strong name. Is it fake, too, or is that your real name? His real name's Larkin, he said. Hey, cool shirt.
Oh, thank you.
What is your name?
My name's Vaughn. Ashley, I loved Infinity Train.
Yes.
Oh, yay. Infinity Train hype.
My question's for actually for Taliesin.
Yeah.
I know Caduceus has had a lot of close calls recently. Is there an X number of character deaths that would stop you from playing this campaign?
Amazing question! You win!
Best question ever.
I mean,
that's all the time we...
there's really only one way to find out.
Is it double digits?
Boy. It's a triple, possibly. No, I at least have two more ideas in the... undeveloped ideas that hopefully will be used in the next campaign is kind of my hope. But,
we'll see.
Oh, let's get to that fourth character.
I hate you all. Oh God.
are they like less and less thought out? So the last guy is just like, I don't know, just like a dude. He doesn't even have a name.
It's just a Gilbert Gottfried accent, and that's all the character is.
I don't know what I roll. What do we do? Yeah, this is all.
That would be awesome. Thank
I would
you.
Love that guy.
Yep, I want it.
That's a fantastic question. Thank you so much. That was great.
Hey,
nice shirt.
Hello, my name's Eric.
Hey, Eric.
The story is so fluid, and you have so many options. Are there any options or moments through campaign one or campaign two that never got fully explored that you really wish you could have gone back to?
It's hard to say for campaign two because they can still go back. There are definitely things that I was hoping or like was excited for them to possibly delve into that they never did, but they might circle back and do so. So I still have those facets are possibly interactable. So I can't go too much into campaign two. Campaign one... I would say, what can I say? Because like they might go to those places in campaign two if they want to. I don't know. Like it's hard setting them both in the same world because there's some things that still lie out there. I will say there was a facet of the story that we got to continue with one of our one shots that'll be airing soon.
Oh.
Oh.
All
right. Yeah. So that'll be fun. One of those hanging threads from campaign one that got to be. Got to be brought to the forefront for that. So look forward to that. I was kind of looking forward into maybe going deeper into like where Thordak had come from and kind of the Onkarel history of Thordak when he first attacked hundreds of years before, and there was a whole aspect of learning more about his history and possibly other elements of combating him beyond just the Soul Anchor. That would involve more direct time spent in Marquette, and you guys were like, nope, we're going after a cloak and we're done.
We need to go back to Marquette. It was so cool.
Well,
dragons don't have motivations. Come on.
In that other orcus horn out there somewhere?
Yeah, there's another orcus horn out there.
Do you know where it is?
Yeah.
Does where? He know where it is?
I'm telling you.
How many horns of orcas are there?
Two horns of orcas.
Yeah, okay, that's horns.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Do you have,
oh,
like,
man,
an orcas tracker, like Santa tracker, but, you know, for orcas?
It's just in a box in Matt and Marisha's garage.
Yeah. Yeah, that campaign gets a little more meta.
That's what still haunts me is that gosh dang box.
I was going to say that one shot.
I answered that, actually.
Box.
Yeah, the box you carry? I answered that in the
camera. I don't believe you. I don't believe your answer.
Then I don't know what else to tell you. I've done my job.
There's something bad in there.
He's lying. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ooh, cool.
Hey.
Hey.
Nice. Yes.
That's great. Sorry.
What's your name?
My name's Sarah.
Hey.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
My question's for Sam. So in a slight spoiler warning for Thursday's episode, but we saw Nat going back and forth between staying with the party and leaving with her family. So it was one, and we saw the outcome of that. I'm not going to say anymore, but was there any point early in the episode or any episode before where she was seriously considering leaving with her family?
Yes, absolutely. You're supposed to protect me, Caleb. For sure, yeah. I've been bopping back and forth with that for a while now, because just gaming it out in my head, like a mom reunited with her family, why would she ever leave? You know, like it would take a lot. It would take a lot to separate a mom from her kids, from her family, and you know, not loves traveling with this gang, but you know, she really wants to be home. So, yeah, for sure. And I talked to Matt about it sort of offline too. And I said, I think I called you one day, and I was like, hey, Matt, start preparing for me not to be in the campaign anymore. And he was like, oh, okay. but I think what happened on Thursday, not to spoil it for anyone, I think was right for the moment. And we'll see how it plays out. I don't know if it's going to embolden Nat going forward or restrict what she does. I don't know. It's going to be fun. I don't know. Thank you. Great question.
Good question.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and
I
did remember another facet of that earlier question. Another thing you guys didn't explore was the relationship with the clasp and Iman.
Mm.
Yeah. You guys turned that deal down. There's a whole cool thing that could have gone on with that if it.
Ooh.
Hello. Sorry.
Card flip.
Good tease. Hey, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Jordan Knight. I'm a DM for the Seattle University Dungeons and Dragons Club.
Awesome.
Yeah, nice.
I'm dressed up as your mortal enemy, Yoshikage Kira from JoJo's Part 4.
Yeah. You're a terrible, not you, the character's a terrible person.
Yeah.
You look great as a terrible person.
Thank you. My question was actually for you, Matt, but of course I love all of you. As a DM and one of the people who knows the most about Dungeons & Dragons rules, how do you separate your DM life and knowing everything behind the scenes with being a player and trying to actually like play your character without, you know, min-maxing or using the rules to your advantage or making the most powerful person you possibly can?
Well, to one degree, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if that's your fun for the game, that is a way to do it. And there are some games where, if I don't get a chance to play very often, where I'll be like, I want to try out this combination of like multi-classing that seems like it could be really broken so that I can try it out. And if it is, I can ban it from my future games. So there's a facet of that that's really fun. But also, you know, the longer you play, you might find that your enjoyment comes from trying things that are different and quirky. And also respecting the other players that may not have as much knowledge. You know, I've played with other DMs that don't have as much experience as me, and the urge is there to make rules corrections or to remind them, and I try not to, and kind of tell myself just to keep quiet and let them run the table, because this is their game. Unless they ask me for a clarification, you know, who am I to inform what the rules are? This is their table. And so you just kind of have to make that separation. But it is a conscious effort. You know, it's hard because when you're in that situation and you're kind of the ringmaster of that group for so long, that mindset is hard to kind of clear. So it is a gear switch for me, definitely.
I got a weird addendum to that, actually, mm-hmm. which is in the realm of min-maxing, and I have complicated feelings about such things. If you think about, like, what's the modern term, the metagame of something, of like the metagame of D&D, part of the fun of the metagame of D&D is, much like a normal video game, is that it's changing all the time. And, like, the Magnificent Mansion was considered to be a dump spell many years ago until Sam was like, no, that spell is awesome, and you should all have it, and he's right. So it's really experimenting in those weird crevices where no one's like with the stuff that no one plays with, that you might discover something like really incredible that like it's fun to like to repeat other people's success, but finding your own success like deeper in the cave,
yeah. Challenging yourself to take the things that aren't considered fun or interesting in the game necessarily from the min-maxer standpoint, and show them how wrong they are.
Also, in general, our group embraces playing make-believe, and over the last 4 years, I've become a home DM for two games, and I know often you'll throw something at us, and not always, but I'll go like, oh, I know what that is in my head. But the fun of it, for our group anyway, is just playing make-believe, and you can still easily play make-believe knowing that that thing is a Bahir, or, you know, what have you.
I'm curious, oh my God. How many people in this room started playing D&D after seeing the show?
Wow.
That's great. Crazy.
How many people in this room play? Awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very cool.
How many don't?
No booze.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ooh.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Good question.
Yeah. All right, look at
that. Yeah. Awesome. Yes.
What is your name? You can pull that mic down a little bit. There you go.
Okay. Well, hi. I love you guys a lot. Just saying. So my question's for Sam. It's kind of a jokey thing, but it's been in my brain since Knott's whole deal came out. Is there a particular reason why you chose to play two small characters with a secret child two campaigns in a row?
Yeah, Sam.
I can answer this one. He's not very bright.
I have one idea, and I'm sticking to it. The small thing is partly because of Liam O'Brien, because he picks my characters for me. But also because even though I'm a 6-foot-tall man, I have like a small man disease where I just feel like I should be even bigger. I don't know. No, the kid thing, Matt chose the first kid.
Yeah, you didn't know about Kaylee in the first
campaign.
I did
not. I mean, Kaylee is probably not alone, right? Like... Scanlan
probably
has like a bunch.
Come on, Matt, give us a number.
Roll a D10.
Only a D10?
Right. What's the multiplier?
Yeah, D10 plus 4.
For each city in...
but no, I have children in real life, and I love them. And so I think about them all the time, and I kind of want to think about them in the game, too. And that's it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, I plan to start thinking about Sam's next character soon.
Yes, please. Hey, what's your name?
Hey.
I am DJ.
Hi, DJ.
Can you guys hear me through this?
Yeah.
Yeah, just okay, you can get a little closer to the mic.
I'm trying to protect you all, so no, I hope you
appreciate
it.
Oh, you're great.
It.
No worries. Thank you.
Matt, Mordekainen's tome had not come out when you developed the Shadowfell the first time around. But you got to use the Sorrowsworn this time around. Which one's your favorite?
Of the Sorrowsworn?
Yeah.
I think probably the Lonely, the ones that they fought in the game, which is why I wanted to use them so bad. Those who don't know, in the Shadowfell, they have these creatures called Sorrowsworn that are essentially like physical corrupted embodiments of negative emotions. And they're just these horrible, haunted entities that wander the Shadowfell. And like there's some that are based out of hunger, and so they just continuously find things to like stuff into their maw. There's ones that are angry and they're lashing out. And then what you saw them come across with the lonely, and those are the ones that were just with the hook arms that want to just grab and hold and hug and hold you until you died. And there's just something so creepy to me about that. Plus the idea that one of them is holding somebody, if somebody else attacks them, they hurt their friend too through psychic backlash. It's just a horrible, nasty thing. So I think mechanically and just conceptually, those are my favorite, which is why I wanted to use them.
Blech. I'm sorry, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I am too.
Hey, quick shout out to our interpreter over here. Thank you so much. Yes. What's your name? Margie, thank you very much. My sister's a sign language interpreter, so I really appreciate what you do. What's your name?
Hello, my name is Michaela. I'm a huge D&D fan. I grew up playing first edition with my family.
Awesome. Wow.
Nice. So thank you for getting more of my friends into it because they weren't very enthusiastic at first. And also thank you for all the emotional trauma.
You're welcome.
So my question is for Taliesin and Matt. When this campaign is completely over, would you ever consider releasing Molly Mock's full backstory? Because I know a lot of us still have questions.
That will be up to Matt.
When it
hits, yeah, I can go into like the whole, yeah, once this is wrapped up, I'm happy to have like a conversation about that weird.
Well, you'd probably want to know too, because there are a lot of facts.
Yeah, there's a bunch of
backstory that you don't know.
It's a ton I don't know. And then, yeah, I'm happy to like share like the rant I gave you at the tattoo parlor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. When this campaign's over, we'll definitely do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hey.
Whoa.
Speaking of emotional trauma.
Oh.
Speaking of emotional trauma, they say.
Hi. What's my name's Alina.
Hi, Alina.
This question was actually sent to me by my friend Caleb Isn't on Fire, and it's Taliesin.
Yeah.
Does Caduceus think he's going to meet his family at the kiln? And what does he think about confronting them given his recent experiences?
He's hoping that some of his family is at the kiln. And he's also hoping that one of the other families is at the... He's got a lot... He is built of expectations. We'll see.
That's true.
We'll see how it plays out if those expectations aren't met. Again, he's got a little bit of that weird Pollyanna syndrome where he will make lemons out of lemon-shaped rocks if he has to, lemonade out of it. But, like, yeah, I don't know what's going to be there. But, yeah, he definitely is expecting something great. Whether or not it's there is going to be very interesting. So we'll see. Oh, God. I'm nervous.
Tune in next week.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Well,
before we get to the next one, Ashley, how are you feeling about things post since you left, what's going on with Yasha? Matt the other night on Talks, I don't know if you saw it, but he basically said, you know, you're an NPC, and he said, I have control over it. He made this weird.
Yeah, it's weird being an NPC. I remember at the end of the game, I was like, okay, well, if I come back into town, he's like, well, it's an NPC now. I was like, okay. I feel that Yasha is obviously in the best hands with Matt. And I think I love the storyline. I think it's so much to play with, and it goes with a lot of the backstory that I wrote and a lot of what Matt prepared and stuff that I don't even know and stuff I do know, and I love it. I feel really good about it, but I can't wait to come home and see what's going to happen if Yasha comes back.
Yeah.
No.
Shut
up. Okay.
Depending on when you come back, like there's a good chance you might have to make another character.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
We'll tackle that when we get to it.
What do you mean?
If she's still evil when Ashley comes back.
Don't say that on the Comic-Con panel.
You're bumming these people out, man.
Like I said, I don't know what the story will be then. But we'll deal with it when we get there.
Yeah. Wow.
Ashley, Matt and I will be discussing.
I will fireball your character.
I will rage on your character via through Matt.
You heard it here first.
Thanks for coming.
No, we're not
heard it here
you.
First.
All right, Spider-Man. What's your real name?
Hey, guys. My name's Ian Templeton.
Hi.
Matt, I wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
As a DM, how do you make sure all your characters get enough time in the spotlight so that they all feel fully fleshed out?
My characters are their characters.
They're all characters.
Gotcha. So the party. It's a level of preparation you have to consider when you're preparing a session. It doesn't always work out, but trying to consider what aspects of the story and the challenges and the things that they might, you know, go into that can play to their individual strengths. So you kind of offer opportunities where they each can shine, hopefully. And even if ones you didn't prepare or the story goes in a direction you didn't expect, keeping that in mind whenever challenges do occur or you need to put things in front of them to engage or to, you know, muck up the story for them, if you will, because that's really what DMs do, is like, oh, you're having a good time walking on that path. It'd be a shame if something bad happened to you. Yeah. It's just keeping in mind that, you know, what are they good at? What do they enjoy doing? What do they enjoy accomplishing? What challenges can I throw at them that gives, you know, each individual character or characters together a moment to circumvent that issue? Success or failure, it still gives them an opportunity to feel helpful to the rest of the party, to show off the skills that they've worked hard to build and, you know, be better at. And it ends up making a great story after the fact, success or failure. So it's just an extra level of concentration to keep in there. And as far as giving each other time, that's honestly a lot of the players too, respecting each other at the table and knowing when to step in, when to step out. That just comes with experience. And honestly, having that conversation at the beginning, if a party isn't as comfortable as we were as friends at the get-go, being upfront about that, you know, telling everyone at the table, all right, guys, make sure to be conscious, to let other people opportunities to engage in the story, to have moments and shine, try not to step on each other. And if it becomes an issue, communication is the key to making a good, healthy game group.
And even outside of just the DM, it's as a player, if you see one of your other players is not, you know, getting a lot of time to shine, it's nice as your character to engage them and bring them into whatever conversation you're having.
Yeah, I mean, case in point, and even though you'll have a party member who might be the best conversationalist of persuasion, that doesn't mean that they should always be the person that has the conversation. You know,
it's fun to fail.
It's fun to fail. And it's also fun when characters that aren't good at it sometimes roll well or make a really good convincing argument or both and get to surprise the rest of the party and have a character moment doing something that they're not very good at either. So that also comes with respect between the players to know, like, well, I could do that, but they seem really excited about trying this. Even though it's my specialty, I'll let them give it a shot, you know? And that's just more the respect you find at the table.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great
good question.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, who's next?
Yes.
Marty.
Yeah.
McFly.
Oh, that's heavy, Doc. Wow.
What's your name?
So my name is Mikey.
Hey, Mikey.
And I have a question for Sam.
Sure.
So I play a bard in a high-level campaign with my friends, and recently she died and was just barely resurrected by
your
the party.
Or the, her for your friend's character?
Are you the friend?
No. I'm the bard that almost died.
Oh, okay. Oh. Okay.
And she barely came back thanks to Matt's resurrection laws.
Oh, no.
Anyways, I wanted to ask Sam, since you've played a bard that's died, barely come back, and went through the rest of the campaign.
You should definitely leave the campaign.
Yeah. See, I thought about that, but I kind of like her.
Okay.
A little. How do you think I should go forward playing a bard that's gone through that experience?
Ooh. Well, what does your bard do? Does she? It's a she, yeah? Does she sing? Does she play a lute? Does she do air guitar? What does she do?
She plays a mandolin.
Okay.
And likes to use polymorph to turn into a T-Rex a lot.
I love this character, by the way. oh man, with T-Rex arms, can she even reach the mandolin? Because I want to see that visual. Maybe like a musician who's gone through something rough, you know, that changes your music, right? Like instead of just fun ditties or whatever, maybe she plays more like soulful ballads or Creed songs or... I don't know. Yeah, right, because musicians are affected by life and stuff.
Everything is evanescence.
Okay, wake enough with these references.
Wake me up inside! Can't wake up!
Fill the bar.
Wake me up! So yeah, maybe it affects her music. Maybe she does. Maybe she's not about inspiring other people anymore. Maybe it's more selfish or self-protective from now on. But definitely do a power ballad with T-Rex arms or some sort of T-Rex arm drum solo. Come on.
All right. Well, thanks. That's really helpful.
Sorry.
Oh, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know the rules better than I do. If your bard starts singing Creed, you have to kill them. Right?
It's not rules as written, but it's heavily implied.
Okay. It is known, as they say.
Yeah, there's like 7 spells specifically to do that.
So. Okay. Awesome. What is your name?
Hello, I'm Asher.
Hey, what's
Hello.
Up?
Hello.
Matt, I just want to say, 3 years ago, you did something very nice for my brother-in-law, Bryce, and my sister, Gabrielle. I just want to thank you for that. Anyway.
Well, you're welcome. Whatever it was, I'm glad they liked it.
Yeah, it was very nice. don't want to say it, but it was very nice. Mm. Anyway, my question is for you, Matt.
Okay.
If you could go back in time to when you started the first campaign or started the live stream, what advice would you give yourself?
Ooh, that's a really interesting question. I would say don't stress out so much about what people on the internet think about you.
I know.
You know, putting yourself on the internet, especially your face and your passion, is a really easy way to open yourself to a lot of unwarranted criticism. And I'm all for constructive criticism, but the internet is not great at constructive criticism. And it's taken me a long time to kind of be able to differentiate between the two and kind of drown that out. So I would go back and try and help myself maybe not let that hit so hard in some ways, definitely. Other than that, I'd say I'd tell them what you're doing is right. Hold on to it. guard this wonderful little lightning in a bottle family with all your heart and you'll be fine.
Thank you.
That's great advice. We got time for a few more. Yes.
Ooh.
What's Antlet. Up, Kiki?
Hey.
What's your name?
My name is Miles.
Hi, Miles.
So my question was actually for Marisha. If Bo were a druid, what would her go-to wild shape be?
Oh.
Ooh. She shouldn't curse. A damn owl. Just want to be a bird. Yeah. Take that, Thaddeus.
Well, awesome.
Thank you so much. I love
that. Hey, another Keeler.
A lot of rage. A lot of rage there.
Thank you very much. What's
Hello.
Your name?
I'm Jillian.
You look fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much.
All these great Keeleths showing up is awesome.
No, there's a lot today. Now that we're into the thick of the Mighty Nein's story, it's clear that they have a very different relationship to heroism and taking responsibility for the things they get involved with. We did meet Vox Machina partway through the journey, but we did see them kind of get into the thick of things with everything they got into. Obviously, as players, you want to do different things every time, but from a character standpoint, where does that thematic difference come from?
I kind of feel like the Mighty Nein has kind of turned into fighting for the everyman. I think we're a little bit more tapped in with society and the people around us, where I think Vox Machina very quickly got on like a higher echelon of like people.
I feel like Vox Machina, though, like, I feel like as players in that campaign, we felt we knew who the good guys were. Do you know what I mean? It felt more cut and dry in that first campaign. Yeah. And as the Mighty Nein, I feel like everything's so gray and it's much harder to make that choice. And therefore, what steps up is the people around us and going, oh, we need to protect everybody that's become a victim of the bigger picture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way of putting it.
That makes me happy to hear.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Hey, What's your name?
Hey. Hello, my name's Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
My question's for Matt. Matt, I'm actually a close friend of your personal trainer, Ferris.
He may have no way! Yeah. That's awesome!
Yeah, so he may have mentioned I'd be coming to ask a question.
Yeah, yeah, no, he talked about you the other day. Pleasure
to meet you. Sort of related to that, I know with your busy schedule, with voice acting, all the gigs you kind of get, what kind of goes into like the mental and maybe even physical preparation of DMing for Critical Role every week?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh. Yeah, paint us a picture. What's the montage look like?
I'm working on that, honestly. You know, all of this is very exciting. It's also very, it's incredible. It's time consuming in the best way. And it's also something that is scary. You know, all of this attention and all this, you know, positivity is a very scary thing for us to handle and be the front of. But that also makes us want to protect that much more. So there's a lot of effort going into my own mental health and us checking in as friends and making sure that thread is still the baseline, like I mentioned earlier. And for me, I'm trying to be better at the physical element too. You know, when you get stressed, people deal with it different ways, especially as I get older and the metabolism slows. Yeah. It's the worst. So like Ferris has been a huge help for me. He's my personal trainer. He's awesome. So yeah, me, I'm all these things I'm trying to be better about. It's an ongoing process, and I'm not always the best at it. And I falter and I stumble and I pick myself back up. But I think that accountability has been really helpful for me, both from my friends and from your friend Ferris kicking my ass during the week. Yeah. So trying to make the push to do that. Yeah. You don't have to be perfect at it, but just making the effort and knowing it's okay to stumble and then just pick yourself back up and keep going forward has been huge for me.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
No, thank you.
That's really cool. All right, we have time for one more question, and okay. It's you, my friend. What's your name?
No pressure. Chris. I'm actually the DM of the T-Rex Bard.
Oh, hey.
That's awesome.
So my question is actually for Matt. Being a DM running a high-level campaign where there are bards that can turn into T-Rexes and stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
How do you manage your DM life balance? Do you set aside a certain amount of time to prep and then you say no more than that, or do you think about it whenever you have a free moment? Like, how do you manage that much stuff?
That's a good question. It can vary. Whenever I'm driving somewhere, whether it be to work stuff, or if I have more than 20 minutes of a drive, that usually is my brainstorming period. I do schedule evenings of the week. Usually it's like Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening. If all else fails, if I don't have like immediate inspiration, the weekend is my like unload time, you know, not think about anything over the weekend. And then as the week begins, I begin to start contemplating and planning. And depending on how busy it gets, sometimes it's a frantic Thursday morning. Oh God.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. not too much, thankfully, but.
So like if we came to your window and just sort of peeked in on Thursday.
Good luck. Don't give Travis any ideas. He's trying to squeeze me for info enough as it is.
I've tried to see in Matt's windows, the screens are really dark.
That's true.
Don't try.
But yeah, I would say just trying to make sure that I, whenever I have time to myself, to use that time to kind of brainstorm and get excited about the stuff that they did last game and how that will change the story and where they're possibly going the next time. And then when I sit down, scheduling myself time that I can actually sit down and focus on it so I'm not freaking out. And even then, as a dungeon master, I prepare more than I used to, largely because if you have 6-7 friends at a table, your story can be pretty cohesive, but it can be a lot more sloppy and open, and they probably will never notice. When you have the internet pouring through all of your world building week to week and creating wikis that isolate and identify any issue you may have come across in your world building, I have to put a little more effort into it week to week. So there's an extra element of responsibility there that thankfully you'll probably not have to worry about, or one day you might, in which case, welcome and I'm sorry. So yeah, it's just scheduling time so you feel comfortable and ready when you go into the session. And then sometimes you won't have the time and you just go, sure, let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. That is all the time we have, my friends. Thank you to everyone who came out.
We love you guys.
Thank you guys so much.
Don't forget to love each other.
Thank you for listening to Talks Machina on the Critical Role Podcast Network. If you like this episode, please drop a review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Talks Machina airs live on Twitch at twitch.tv/Critical Role on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Pacific. We'll see you next time.